Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, January 8th. I'm Alan Shartart. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital Medical Group, 24 locations across the greater Saratoga region, providing inpatient and outpatient health care to their community. SaratogaHospital.org to learn more. Joining this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. Kristen Logi of HealthQuest Medical Practice. She's a rheumatologist. She specializes in diseases that affect the joints, muscles, bones, and immune system. You know, when we have somebody like Krista on the show, we get a lot of calls, so get yours in early. The number is 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Logi, your calls, much more, all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Kristen Logi of HealthQuest Medical Practice. She's a rheumatologist. She specializes in diseases that affect the joints, muscles, bones, and immune system. Dr. Logi is board certified by the American Osteopathic Board of Internal Medicine with a subspecialty certification in rheumatology. She graduated from Messiah College in Pennsylvania, earned her doctoral degree in osteopathic medicine from the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey in Newark. Dr. Logi, welcome to the Medical Monday.
Thanks for having me.
We do get a lot of calls asking us to have rheumatologists on. So if anybody wants to talk to you, now's the time. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and you can always write us at WAMC Vox Pop, at WAMC.org. Okay, so let me start first by asking you, Doctor, what is it exactly that a rheumatologist does?
So we treat two main categories of disease. The first dealing with diseases that affect specifically the joints, the muscles, tendons. So we provide a lot of non-surgical orthopedic care, dealing with degenerative arthritis or injuries. The other category of disease is autoimmune diseases, or diseases that occur when your body's immune system that normally functions to fight infection instead turns around and attacks different organ systems in your body. Usually those diseases are associated with joint pain and swelling, but any other organ system could be affected by those. One of the most common examples would be lupus.
Is lupus a disease that goes through the population? In other words, are people more or less likely to get it in a particular situation?
There's certain ethnicities that are more inclined to get it. So Hispanic or African Americans, young females tend to be the most commonly affected. It's not contagious or anything like that, but if you have a family history, your chance of or your risk of developing it is higher than somebody who doesn't have family members affected.
Okay, we'll go to our regular first caller, Jim from Matamoros. Okay, Jim, what do you have for us today?
What influence does weather systems such as low pressure areas have on rheumatism?
Good question.
It's a common complaint that I get from my patients, actually. A lot of patients with degenerative or wear and tear arthritis in the joints or other kinds of arthritis like rheumatoid arthritis say they feel worse with damp weather, cold weather, or when there's storms coming in that they can predict the weather. And the theory behind that is basically that the changes in the barometric pressure in our surroundings also affect the pressure within the joint and the joint capsule itself. And when those change, the capsule can be stretched and cause more pain.
And what is a joint capsule?
So every joint in your extremities is surrounded by a capsule, which is kind of like a balloon that goes around the,
really?
The connecting parts of the joints. And it's lined with a special tissue called synovium, and that tissue is often what becomes inflamed during diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, and that's what causes the damage to the joints.
Do you know how to deflame it?
So that's the trick. So we usually have to use potent anti-inflammatories. Prednisone will work quickly, but has a lot of side effects. And so one of our big jobs as a rheumatologist is to manage the disease by suppressing the immune system with the drugs that would cause less side effects. So we use a lot of other medications that are either oral or injectable, and they're immunosuppressive type drugs that basically quiet down your immune system and stop it from attacking the joint and
gotcha.
Shut the process off so that we don't end up with very damaged joints.
Good explanation. Let's go to Debbie in Albany. Debbie, your turn. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. 62 years old, has had fibromyalgia for the last 30 years. I wondered what is the latest medication on that, but my main concern now is I was told I need total knee replacement. Everything seems to be going after I hit like 60. My knee, arthritis in my hands, my fingers, it's terrible. What to do?
Yeah, so first of all, just for anyone who's not familiar, fibromyalgia is a pretty common condition, especially in women. Often starts in, you know, their 20s or 30s, but can develop later in life and causes chronic pain throughout the body and the muscles, joints, sometimes even the skin hurts. It doesn't damage the bones or joints, but it causes a lot of debility in the sense that it affects their quality of life. So the management of it, I think we still have a long way to go with it, unfortunately, but one of the most important things is getting regular exercise. If sleep is poor, doing things to improve the quality of sleep, because it's when the patients get a good night of sleep that their bodies relax, rest, restore, and recover.
How do you help people get sleep?
So it's a combination of different things, following certain recommendations, getting exercise during the day, getting a set schedule for going to sleep at the same time and waking up at the same time, not taking naps during the day. When you're getting ready to go to bed, make sure the lights are dim, you're not watching TV, and you haven't drank anything with caffeine for several hours before then. But the other part of it, sometimes we use medications.
Physical therapy has helped tremendously for years, but can food aggravate it?
Nothing that's ever, we've never seen any clear association between food and fibromyalgia. So I can't say that. So the exercise is part of managing it, control or improving the sleep. If there's any associated anxiety or depression, treating those things because they exacerbate the pain, and then medications. So, you know, sometimes we use medications to improve
the sleep.
This
is really important. Muscle cramps, tremendous, like as if I would want to go to the emergency room. Is that from the fibromyalgia? Terrible muscle cramps lately.
Are they happening at night?
Usually in the morning when I wake up out of bed. Thighs and calves.
A lot of patients with fibromyalgia do experience muscle cramps, but a lot of patients without fibromyalgia do as well. So I can't say if they're clearly related. Those can be difficult to treat, but stretching before you go to bed, gentle stretching when you first get up, staying hydrated. There's some thought that a glass of tonic water a day could help with that because it contains quinine, which we used to prescribe for muscle cramps, and it worked very well, but they determined that the risks of the prescription outweighed the benefits, but you can still get some from 8 ounces of tonic water a day.
Debbie, thank you very much. And let's go to Bill in beautiful Troy, New York. All right. Bill, you're on.
Alan, and thank you for this show. It's just tremendous. You all are the best station in this Northeast. I had a general question concerning diet and nutrition as to whether or not there was any way one could defer joint problems, and if there was any foods that one would need to avoid as well as consume.
So it's a good question, and I think it's something we're learning more and more about all the time. There does seem to be some suggestion that an anti-inflammatory or Mediterranean-style diet may reduce joint pain and reduce some of the inflammation.
And what is that, vegetables
so,
and fruit?
Yeah, so seafood, olive oil, healthy lean vegetables, things like that. So the the fish, like salmon and sardines and things like that, have a lot of omega-3 fatty acids, and those have anti-inflammatory properties. There's other things that you can, you know, take naturally in your diet, like turmeric, which is a spice that's frequently used in India, but they found with some smaller studies that it has good anti-inflammatory properties. And so sometimes people with joint pain will feel better if they take that. We don't know if changing your diet can prevent you from developing something like rheumatoid arthritis, but it certainly can maybe reduce the symptoms.
So is medicine, do you take the turmeric as a medicine or do you take it on your food?
You could do it either way, but it's probably easiest to get the adequate amount by taking a capsule or a supplement. Usually I would recommend 500 milligrams twice a day or three times a day. Wow. And it's hard to get that, you know, unless you're cooking with it an awful lot.
Outstanding. But you just mentioned something in talking about fish. Mm-hmm. And another question came to mind. I guess wanted to slip that in. I spent a great deal of time in a hyperbaric environment, and I understand that there can be issues later in life if you spend a lot of time under pressure. Do you have any information on that?
Does that mean you're a diver or something like that?
Yeah, hoo-yah, deep sea diver.
Ah, okay.
So you're basically under high pressure situations. You mean your body is under increased pressure is what you mean?
Yes, because I'd understood that the Navy had mm-hmm. some issues, or they were doing some studies that people of divers, because they found out later in life they would have issues with necrosis, especially saturation divers.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any association between the two, but it may make sense. I mean, anything that changes the way the joint is, you know, the joint would be under different pressures too, and when you're moving it, it's moving differently, can predispose you to, you know, small little injuries within the joint over time. But
so what's bends? If you get the bends,
is decompression sickness.
Yeah, but where do you get it? Where's the site?
Well, what happens is then the body, or if you make an excursion to depth, the pressure causes the gases in your body to dissolve into a liquid. And then when you return to the surface, then the gases come back out of solution. And if they come out too fast, that's why you got to make a measured ascent. If they come out too fast, then they're lodge in your joints or maybe in more significant areas you might embolize. That's weird.
Gotcha. Hey, Bill. We got to take a break. I thank you for your call. You really are terrific to make it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Appreciate all you do, Al.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
For Vox Pop on WAMC comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, announcing new primary care center on Main Street, Fonda, now open, NLH.org. Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, honoring founder Jim Kozak, continuing his work for over four decades and four generations, helping the chemically dependent and their families battle addiction. VillaVeritas.org. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butterscotch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering free trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com. And from the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. nature.org/Adirondacks.
And we are back with Dr. Kristen Logi, who is a wonderful rheumatologist and is here to answer your questions. And we are very, very happy that she is here. Okay, so Kristen, let's begin with a call from, and there are four people on the line. We'll get them all right now. Okay, Marcia in Austerlitz. Marcia in Austerlitz, you're on.
Hi, I have one question. I have Bichette. I know most people don't know what it is, but I'm wondering if there have become any new treatments for it. My machete is getting worse, and I just would like to know if new treatments are being treated symptomatically. And so far, that's all they could do for me.
I didn't catch the disease. Did you, Kristen?
Yes, it's called Behçet's. So it's an uncommon disease, which is a form of a vasculitis where you get inflammation in small blood vessels. And the typical symptoms that patients have would be very painful ulcers or sores in their mouth. They can get very painful genital ulcers, inflammation in the eyes, and more serious cases, it can affect the blood vessels in the lungs and other blood vessels to more vital organs. But most people have the ulcers as their main complaint. In your lungs?
Yeah.
So as far as if there's any treatments being developed specifically for Behçet's, I would say no, because it's such an uncommon disease. All of the treatments that we use for it are treatments that are developed and designed for more common diseases but are found to work in Behçet's. So in cases that are bad enough, we would use our different types of immunosuppressive drugs, things that we use in other forms of vasculitis or rheumatoid arthritis. There's certain medications that help the ulcers more, but there's nothing new that's specifically being developed for Behçet's. So it's usually a process of trial and error with the other immunosuppressives we already have.
Thank you, Marcia. Okay, and now we will go to Jerry in Tribes Hill. Okay, Jerry in Tribes Hill, you're on.
Yeah, hi, doctor. Are they any closer to finding what causes RA? And are they even looking to find what causes RA? Or is most of the scientific research into treatment and how to deal with the disease?
I would say the big focus is the treatment. So most of the research is being done on developing new treatments for it. But there is interest in what triggers rheumatoid. It's something we can't really answer at this point. We know that it happens in people who have a genetic tendency towards it. And then there's something in the environment or something they're exposed to that triggers the disease into action. There is an increased incidence of it in smokers. We think the smoking causes inflammation essentially in the lungs that translates into inflammation in the joints. We know that some people who will develop rheumatoid arthritis have antibodies for it years before they actually develop the actual arthritis. But what triggers them from being normal to developing the disease, we don't know. And I don't know how long it'll be before we have that answer. Maybe there's several different answers.
So that may be epidemiological hell, because obviously a lot of questionnaires go out and say, when do you get it and under what circumstances, right?
Yeah, there might be many circumstances for it. So we think infection may be one of the bigger things that triggers it.
Okay, but smoking is never a good idea.
No,
nope.
It doesn't help.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that very good question. All right, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You want to get on? This is a pretty good time to do it. Let's go to Linda in Central Massachusetts. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I was wondering if what treatment you would recommend for Lyme disease, and is it possible to totally recover from it?
So it depends on the stage of Lyme and the way that the Lyme is affecting you. The treatment depends entirely on that. So if it's early Lyme, we usually treat it with a short course of antibiotics before any complications develop. What I deal with in rheumatology is tertiary or late stage Lyme, where it starts to affect a joint or a couple of joints. Usually in that case, it causes a big swollen knee. You know, about 90% of the time, that's what patients present with.
Yeah, actually, that's what I have.
Oh, okay. So the initial treatment is typically a month course of oral antibiotics. If you don't get better with that, another month of oral antibiotics can be repeated. Alternatively, you can use a month of IV antibiotics. In patients who don't respond to those three courses of antibiotics, we think that there's some ongoing immune system triggering the inflammation. And so sometimes we'll try lower level immunosuppressives to reduce the inflammation and prevent the swelling in the joint if we think we've already adequately treated the infection itself. Most people, even untreated, in 5 years, the arthritis goes away and the joint returns to normal.
Linda, do you want to follow up?
Nope, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. All right. And now we're going to go to Nancy in Adams, Massachusetts. Adams under the Great Tower, which we've just purchased. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a suggestion for the lady that called in with leg cramps. I, too, suffer leg cramps occasionally, and some of my friends have told me what their method is. Regular or yellow mustard. Take a spoonful of that, and they keep a bottle by their bedside because sometimes it's in the middle of the night or when you get up that you have the cramp. And you swallow it, and within a few seconds, it's gone. Well, I thought they were crazy. I was at a wedding not too long ago, and on the dance floor, I had a severe cramp that was so bad I could barely walk off the floor. I went to the kitchen. I asked the chef for some mustard. He gave me a little ramekin full of it, so I took about 2 tablespoons. And by the time I swallowed it and walked back to the dance floor to my table, the cramp was gone.
Dr. Logie,
and he suggested it was probably the turmeric that's in the mustard because he takes turmeric for shoulder pain. I don't know what makes it work, but it works, folks, so give it a try.
Okay, Dr. Logie, any reaction to this?
Well, it's a method I haven't heard, but I have heard a lot of different ways that people use to get rid of cramps, and some of them seem, you know, you can't understand the reasoning behind it, but they swear by them. So I say if it helps, then
well, now that this has helped me actually twice,
yeah,
I'm passing that on to other people. Try
it. Certainly can't mustard hurt, so why not?
any particular brand, Nancy?
Nope, but I also want to know if a lack of, was it magnesium or potassium, is a cause for cramping. That lady may be low in those two minerals.
In the vast majority of cases, when we check the levels of those, they're found to be normal.
Okay.
So typically not, but some people do feel better if they take a magnesium supplement before bed.
Or maybe some banana every morning.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Okay. And now, looking at the times everybody called in, yes, now we've got a Jim also in Adams under the Great Tower. Okay, Jim.
Yes, Alan. I don't know if you saw on the notation there that we're going to double our contribution this year, this February drive, due to the need for buying the tower.
Oh, that is so good of you.
It's not a big amount, as you know, if you look us up.
No, I'm telling you, that is so great. If everybody were to do a little something, I would not be staying up in the middle of the night right now.
You don't have to, Alan. We got your back, I think.
Oh, that's great. Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, I wonder if the doctor had heard about the use of food supplementing with kelp or other sea vegetables to alkalize the system, the blood chemistry, and to throughout the body.
No, actually, I haven't heard anything about that. I'll have to look into it.
Say it again. Yes. Say it again, so we can
kelp
follow.
Kelp. Both, or we call them seaweeds, use to alkaline the blood chemistry and eliminate inflammation throughout the body systems.
Where do you get your seaweed?
I purchase it at the Pittsfield Natural Health Food Store on North Street.
Oh, interesting.
It's very cheap. It's fairly finely ground, so it dissolves in a little bit of unsweetened apple juice very well. And our bodies were meant to be alkaline like the oceans on the planet.
Okay. Well, you know, I get mine at the Japanese restaurant, but I don't know if they screw it up with with sugar or something. But thank you so much.
Thank you.
Day,
yeah, I'll look into it.
Thanks, Jim.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and over to Kathleen in Rexford, where everybody is the editor of the Times Union. Okay, go ahead, Kathleen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to get an opinion about cortisone shots because over the years I've had a few and I've decided to stop getting them because I've heard mixed information. So I just wanted to get an opinion about cortisone shots.
Yeah, so I perform a lot of cortisone shots, and I think they have a definite role in treating joint disease, but there is a lot of controversy over them. But I think in recent years, we've come to realize they're safe to do as long as you space them apart appropriately and you're putting them in the right place. So if you put them in a joint, you can repeat it 3 or 4 times a year, and it's safe because it goes in the joint, it comes out of the joint quickly. The benefits of it can last a lot longer than the medicine is actually in there. If you repeat the injections very frequently, it can delay the ability or inhibit the ability of cartilage to repair. So we avoid that. We also avoid injecting into tendons themselves because it can weaken the tendons over time, but you can put it in the area surrounding tendons and do that several times. So the advantage of it is it's relatively safe. And if you have just one or two joints that really bother you, it can allow you to treat the pain without having to take a medication that can affect a lot of other areas of the body.
Thank you very much for that question. All right. I'm moving along a little fast right now because we got an awful lot of people on the line. Let's go to Kathy in Hopewell Junction. All right, Kathy in Hopewell. Go ahead.
Hi, doctor. You said 500 milligrams of turmeric a day or twice a day. I put powdered turmeric in tomato juice or V8, pretty easy to swallow that way. But I don't know what the equivalent to 500 milligrams would be.
You mean you just have plain powdered, not in a capsule?
Right.
Correct.
I believe it would be a gram or two, but you can't quote me on that.
But how would she measure?
Yeah. That's why I say it's easier to get the capsules. You can even break the capsules open if you have to, although it probably costs more to buy it in that form.
I
believe
the
it's a gram or two, but I don't know how you would measure that out.
Get the capsules, swallow one, and drink the tomato juice.
Yep.
real simple.
Hey, the capsules are much more expensive.
They are.
That's all true. Kathy, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. All right. And now we go to, I guess we're going to go to Jamie in Ellenville. All right, Jamie, you're on.
Hey, Alan. By way of segue, if you want to save money on turmeric pills, go to Indian supermarkets or Indian pharmacies. They have them regularly, and it's like $4 or $5 for a big bottle.
Yeah, that's true. I've heard that, too.
Okay. More importantly, I've had Crohn's, fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis for 20 years, and mine came about, I believe, because of a malignant hypothermia bout I had when I had some surgery. And I believe it killed everything in my body that lived. Listening to Radiolab, they say we have in our systems the weight of our head in parasites and biologicals in our body. I think all mine were killed. And ever since then, my body has just not been able to balance. Do you know anything being done in this area? I know in Boston, they came up with a way of getting it put back in your system. I understand this solution has been around since 1958, and doctors don't like it because it's icky.
What solution are you referring to?
Okay, what'd you say, doctor?
Replacing the biologicals in your system, your parasites, everything that's in your intestinal tract is getting it back in there.
Yeah, so they are doing research in that area. So it's kind of what we refer to as the microbiome, all the bacteria that live in your GI tract. And there's a balance between good bacteria that we need and then, of course, keeping the bad bacteria out. And there is some thought and some evidence that when those bacterial levels are altered, that it can translate into autoimmune disease, even in the joints, things like psoriatic arthritis, but certainly with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis.
I think this is a big problem in our entire society, is that we manage to kill off so much of what we need. And our bodies are just reacting in crisis because we've had these things in our system for millions of years and now they're gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I don't know if we've even scratched the surface with the research there.
Very quickly, Jamie, we got to get
moving. I've been on Remicade, I've been on all of those drugs. They steal your mind. Nobody talks about that. And I thought I was crazy about how they affected me mentally. The Samara, the Humira, and forget about Lyrica for fibromyalgia. That will drive you absolutely insane. And nobody seems to care about that effect. People lose their cognitive
Okay, Jamie, stop right there. Doctor.
So I think, with all of those medications, every person processes medications differently. And we see plenty of patients every day that benefit tremendously from those medications. So I certainly wouldn't discount them in any way. We know they change lives and they save lives. So, there's certainly the potential for an adverse reaction anytime you start a medication.
Any medication.
So that's the risk we take, but we think it's worth the risk when we prescribe it.
Jamie, got to go. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Let us go to... we're going to go to Tim in Porter Corners. Okay, Tim, you're on.
Hi there. How you doing today? I have psoriatic arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. I've been on Humira now for years. Before that, I was on all the different injections. I'm up to taking Humira once a week at this point, and it seems like it's becoming less effective. Recently, I've had very bad back issues, which I do have arthritis in my lower back, and it's to the point where it's causing the nerve pain all the way down my leg and into my foot. My concern is that twice now I've had trouble getting the Humira because it has to come from a specialty pharmacy and blah, blah, blah. There's been mix-ups with the insurance, and so delays in getting the medicine where I've gone 2 to 3 weeks
okay,
without
it. Okay, we only have a minute here, so is there a specific question?
Go ahead. My concern is... is the Humira losing its effectiveness on me? And what's the next step? Because I've tried every other type of injectable medicine.
So it's possible it can lose efficacy over time, meaning your body can build antibodies against the drug itself and render it ineffective. The good news is they are coming out with newer drugs that are, there's a couple drugs that have been recently approved for psoriatic arthritis, and there's more in the pipeline. So it'll give you some more options in the future.
Okay, I'm sorry we have to cut you off, but we have to go to a break, and we will.
Support for WAMC comes from New York Oncology Hematology welcoming Omar Badhu to the Albany Medical Center office, now seeing hematology and blood disorder patients. NewYorkOncology.com. Act Smart New York, Saratoga Springs, offering individualized outpatient counseling and Suboxone treatment for opiate use disorder and medical treatment for alcohol problems. ActSmartNewYork.com. Dr. Richard Hallub with the Neurological Associates of Albany, conducting Alzheimer's research for over 25 years, currently conducting a research study for those with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. 518-426-0575 for more information. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. And from Berkshire Country Day, an independent pre-K to 9 school working to inspire the individual promise of every student. Open house January 18th. Intentional, independent, inspired. BerkshireCountryDay.org.
And we are back. A couple of emails very quickly. A lot of people on the phone. So Francis of Williamstown, can arthritis be reversed? If not, what can be done to slow its development, minimize its effect? Can it be treated nutritionally? And do some foods make it worse? I'm referring specifically to arthritis in the hips. Are there specific exercises that improve or worsen this condition? Got an hour or two, doctor?
Yeah. So I'm assuming the type of arthritis you're talking about is degenerative or wear and tear arthritis that develops slowly over time, gets gradually worse. The natural progression of it is that it does worsen over time. There are things you can do to possibly slow down the progression. One of the biggest things is weight loss, because anytime you lose weight from the body, it translates to increased weight loss in the lower extremities. For example, if you lose a pound of body weight, it translates into 4 pounds of pressure off the knee with every step.
Really?
So that's helpful with a lot of forms of degenerative arthritis. There are certain types of exercise. The best thing I would suggest is to have a physical therapist develop a home exercise program for you so that you know you're doing the exercises right and you'll get the most benefit from them.
Okay, thank you for that one. Okay, and now Barbara wants to know, osteoporosis, is it more appropriate for a rheumatologist to treat this rather than an endocrinologist? Not sure my endocrinologist is up to date on this condition. Thank you from Barbara.
I think it depends entirely on the comfort level of the physician. Where I trained in UConn, we had a specialty clinic just for osteoporosis clinic, and that was run entirely by endocrinologists. So they were very well versed in the management of it. But I think there's a lot of rheumatologists that do their own osteoporosis management, and they're really comfortable with it. It really depends on the individual doctor, how much they do of it, and how up to date they stay on it. But either specialty is appropriate.
So very quickly, give us an idea of what you would tell people who suffer from this disease, what to do about it.
From osteoporosis?
Yes.
So the most important thing is dealing with their risk factors. So if they have a low calcium diet, making sure that between the diet, they're getting enough calcium up to 1,000 or 1,200 milligrams a day would be good. Vitamin D, making sure that level is replaced appropriately. Weight-bearing exercises, avoiding things that would detract from the bone density, like excessive caffeine intake, excessive alcohol intake. And then, you know, at a certain point, if the bones are thin enough, there's medications that we can prescribe that will help to reduce the bone turnover and eventually build the bones stronger over time. But, you know, that's something that would have to be decided on an individual basis.
Great. Let's go to Tom in Albany. Hanging on for a long time. Thanks, Tom. You're on.
Hey, Alan. Hi, doctor. How are you today?
Hi. Good, thanks.
Listen, I'm hoping that you can help me so I can help the rheumatologist that I'm going to see. I've gone through hell for the last 7 months due to ticks. I didn't get Lyme. I got ehrlichiosis, anaplasmosis, and later learned that I was Powassan reactive. And that's the rare virus that's out there. My immune system successfully fought off the Powassan. But it's what it's left me with is extremely weak and painful arms and pain throughout my entire body. The muscles are shot. Fatigue is extreme.
Okay, Tom, only because there's so many people on the line, tell us what the question is.
The question, I want the doctor to help me. I'm scheduled to see a rheumatologist.
So what do you want to know?
Into ways that we can figure out how this virus is interacting with my body.
So it would be hard to answer that question without doing a full clinical evaluation of you, because there's, you know, it may be related to the tick-borne illness, or it could be something else that was triggered, you know, your immune system was triggered and maybe set off by having been infected, but it could be a separate disease entirely. I don't think I can do you justice just over the radio.
Tom, sorry about that. Okay, and now we're going to go to Kurt in Burnt Hills. Kurt in Burnt Hills, you're on.
Doctor, for taking my call. A lot of questions about Lyme. I contracted it through tick exposure a number of years ago. Fortunately, I had the acute symptoms, went on the usual 28-day course antibiotics, cleared it up, and then later, interestingly, the swollen knee comment, I was diagnosed with Baker's cyst, so that makes me suspect. But more to the point, I was calling to see if you had any other naturopath alternatives for anti-inflammatories to prednisone and cortisone, which are pretty nasty synthetics. I will speak highly of turmeric, as other people have. And then for cramps, that's electrolyte related. That could be treated with bananas and coconut water, which I find very good efficacy.
Okay, we got to have a question.
Yes.
We got to have a question. Go ahead.
The question, any other naturally occurring anti-inflammatories that you're aware of?
I mean, the omega-3 fatty acids, we know, have some anti-inflammatory properties. And then just, you know, there's various sources we can get through the diet. I don't think any of them are sufficient to take the place of prednisone. It would be nice, but prednisone is much more potent than any of those things will ever be. And so prednisone will always have its place as far as I can see. You know, it's a life-saving drug, but you're right, it does have a number of undesirable side effects. If we could formulate it in a better way, that'd be great, but we're not there yet. Yeah. So
it's pretty simple omega-3s. I will say, as a footnote, my daughter's in a high school research program, and she's doing research on a very ubiquitous flower that grows around here in the Northeast that's showing great promise for natural anti-inflammatory and antibacterial.
And the name of that flower is...
I would like to keep that a little secret, but it's a little white.
A secret? Why would you want to keep it a secret?
Well, she's still researching it.
Oh, come on. Okay, thanks, Kurt. All right, let's go now to Stephanie in Glenville. Okay, Stephanie, you're on.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, I just wanted to call in. I'm a Bikram teacher in the area, and I get a lot of students with RA and Lyme and all of these autoimmune diseases, and we've seen just, like, amazing life-changing results. So I just wanted to throw that out there and, I guess, ask if that's anything that you recommend for people as part of their treatment.
Yeah, I mean, generally, I recommend exercise for almost all of my patients, especially, you know, fibromyalgia, degenerative arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. It's important to keep the bones and joints moving and everything stretched out. So absolutely.
Okay. Great. That's great. Thanks a lot. All right. And now we're going to go to Mary Kate in Troy. Mary Kate, your turn. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah,
go.
Question. Alan?
Yes.
Hi. Doctor, I have a question about Raynaud's syndrome.
Sure.
I've had it for years. It's gotten pretty severe. I have it winter, summer, spring, and fall. And I'm just wondering if there have been any developments in treatments for it. There seem to be woefully few. And my one doctor told me Viagra is a treatment, but I prefer not to try something like that. Any thoughts? Any developments?
So Raynaud's is basically vasospastic, so the blood vessels in the fingers, typically, sometimes the toes, constrict too easily, and they cut off the blood supply, so the fingers turn really white, they go numb. If it's really bad, you can develop very painful ulcers on the fingers. So for that, you know, the main thing is keeping the core temperature warm, dressing in layers, wearing mittens, getting heated gloves, anything you can do to keep from getting to that point. But some people are going to get symptoms every day despite doing that. So typical medications, we use medications that are often used to lower blood pressure, calcium channel blockers. The Viagra is actually a very effective treatment. It's difficult to get it from insurance companies, but we use it in some of our worst cases, and it really does make a difference. There is another type of drug called, it's an endothelin antagonist, basically helps the blood vessels dilate more. Another more expensive but newer treatment for it. And then there's a lot of other things we try. Nitro paste, which people use for heart vasospasm, we can use on the fingers. Even some things like Zoloft and Prozac may help.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And now on to Katie in Brunswick, who's been very patient. Katie, you're on.
Hi, I had a question. Wanted to know if someone can be diagnosed with RA and OA at the same time.
Okay, yeah. RA I know. What's OA? Osteoarthritis.
OA is osteoarthritis, so degenerative or wear and tear arthritis. Right. Rheumatoid is the autoimmune-driven arthritis. Definitely possible and often happens that we have somebody who has both. Usually the osteoarthritis develops more slowly over a number of years. The rheumatoid has a more sudden onset, but often.
So the answer is in the affirmative, mm-hmm. Katie. Now,
yes.
Is there a follow-up?
Can it happen in just the hands, both?
Yes, yeah. So they affect different joints in the hands. So the osteoarthritis typically affects the joints at the tips of the fingers and the middle finger joints, whereas the rheumatoid affects the middle finger joints and the knuckle joints. So
there are so many things.
A way to diagnose? Like, because every doctor I go to tells me I have osteoarthritis, but I recently have a finger that I feel that might be RA, and They just look at it and say,
yeah,
it's osteo.
Yeah, osteo in the hands can be very destructive, very inflammatory, and very painful. And so it's not uncommon for people with OA to think it could be rheumatoid. The only way you can really do it is to examine the joints, take a good history. X-rays can be helpful. Blood tests can be helpful. But really the key is how you're presenting and what your joints look like on exam.
Katie, thanks for the call. That was great. 1-800-348-2551. We're almost out of time, folks, so probably don't waste your time, but you never know. Okay, we'll go to Paul in Newburgh. Okay, Paul, you're on.
Hi. Hello, doctor. How are you?
Hi. Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Something interesting has happened to me. I have like a lot of arthritis from previous injuries that are now arthritic, and my knees are the worst. But in the last like couple of weeks, I feel like I have a new body, because we have these extremely cold temperatures, and I'm speculating that all the humidity is out of the atmosphere. It's been taken away, and this has some definite effect. Should I be living out west instead of taking supplements, Syndisc, injections, physical therapy, and just move?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I would test your theory out a little further, maybe take a vacation to a dry climate first. So there's, no matter where you go, there's still changes in barometric pressure, and that can still affect it. I've never advised somebody to move just based on that.
So humidity levels alone in themselves aren't necessarily making this worse.
Not necessarily, but, you can certainly try it out and see how you feel, but I would go on vacation before I moved.
It's been amazing. People say, how come you're not limping? You've been limping for years.
Yeah, that is,
I don't know.
And usually people feel worse during these colder months, so you're a little bit of an exception to the rule.
In the median temperatures, 30, 40, I can barely walk.
Yeah.
Gotta go. Thank you, Paula Newberg. Okay, now we will go to Bruce in Egremont. Hi, neighbor. What's up?
Hi. About 5 years ago, I replaced my knees because of loss of cartilage. And recently, I've been having a bad time with my wrists. I had them x-rayed, and they said, there's no cartilage left. So I'm wondering, is there something that happens in the body where you just lose cartilage all over? And is there anything that can be done for the wrists?
So, this type of arthritis with cartilage loss or thinning is part of degenerative arthritis. Some people have more of a tendency towards it, and there's definite hereditary factors. Some people live their whole lives and abuse their knees and never need new ones, and other people need them by the time they're 40 or 50. Part of that can be in the wrists. It's a little less typical to get it there. But if you've done things where you're repeatedly, hammering or something like that, it can wear the cartilage away faster. I would say it's not likely that it's an autoimmune-driven process, but more of a hereditary thing and wear and tear process.
Thank you, Bruce. Okay, and now on to John in Pottown, Poughkeepsie. All right, John, go ahead.
John. Yes, hi. About 2 years ago, I had surgery for synovial chondromatitis in my right wrist. And at the time, I was told it could come back, and I believe it is. I was wondering if there's anything I could do diet-wise, exercise, to help minimize that.
Okay, we're running out of time here, Doc. So
that's synovial chondromatosis, is these kind of tumor-like growths that grow within the lining of the joint. Surgical removal is the only way to really get rid of them. We don't know of anything dietary or lifestyle-wise that can prevent it. You might be able to take anti-inflammatories to reduce symptoms related to it, but the end game would be surgery.
And what if you don't?
If you don't, they could continue to grow and cause more symptoms.
And the symptom is pain?
Right.
Discomfort, pain, sometimes swelling.
It does. Well, it's not growing very quickly now. It did grow quickly prior to the surgery.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, the course is variable from person to person, but if it's symptomatic enough, you would need surgery.
Thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to try something. I'll probably be sorry. Let's see here. John and Troy. John, we got a second here. Go ahead. You have pain. You have pain in your front thigh.
My front left thigh, and I don't know what it is. 59 years old, in great shape. I was doing squats. My doctor told me not to do them anymore. It still tingles.
Is it burning, kind of pins and needles kind of pain?
Yes, the burning type pins and needle thing. It just started like 6 months ago.
Okay. It's hard to say without an exam, but myalgia parasthetica is something to think about, where there's a femoral cutaneous nerve that gets pinched, and it causes nerve symptoms in the front and side part of the thigh.
Joe, I'm so sorry. We are out of time. I appreciate it.
Sometimes.
Thanks a lot, Joe. All right. 1-800-348-2551 for the next show, but not today. Okay. We are out of time, and we want to thank Nancy from Pittsfield, who had a knee problem, but we never got to her today, and we're so sorry, Nancy. And I want to thank Dr. Kristen Logie of HealthQuest Medical Practice for joining us today. Somebody wants to get in touch with you. How do they do it, Kristen?
They can call my office at 845-790-2098.
Do it one more time.
845-790-2098.
Okay. Support for the Medical Monday comes from WMC Heart and Vascular Institute, with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks to our wonderful engineer, Zach Malloy, always on the job, to Joe Makowitz, who keeps me honest, for answering the phones, our producers, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Stay tuned now for a news update, and remember that lockbox. We gotta be able to pay for that tower. Okay, at WAMC.org.